I'd like to read with you from Romans chapter 8, the verses 18 through 24. It may be a little different in your bulletin. I've just shortened it up a little bit. But before I do that, let me just pray. Lord, as we go into this Romans 8 this morning, would you bless us? Would you open up our hearts to what you want to show us and teach us? And would you touch every part of us, not just our minds, but also our hearts and our emotions and our wills and our even maybe physically, that we would, as whole people, receive you and receive your word. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So Romans 8, starting with verse 18, it's on the wall, or there's a Bible somewhere around you if you look under a chair, or of course use your own. For I, that is Paul, consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, grown inwardly, as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees? And the verse that I'd like to center everything that I say this morning and do around is verse 20. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And I've titled this Creation's Groaning. And as you, I'm sure, know, I'm a little OCD about language. That is, I like language and pay attention to it, and I pay attention to apostrophes. And if you haven't heard me say this before, a lot of apostrophes are used now very badly in our society, and it bothers me every time. But I've used this one expressly, creation's groaning, to mean two things. Creation is groaning. It's one way to use the apostrophe. And the other way is the groaning of creation, possessive. Okay? Creation is groaning. And then you step back a little bit and you say, the groaning of creation. It's coming from creation itself. And what I'd like to do this morning is focus with you on the groaning of creation. I'm apologize if you were in a pretty happy mood this morning, because my goal is that you not leave here very happy, but that you be groaning along with creation. This is not going to be happy clappy. This is not going to be an easy answer. Yes, things are kind of bad for some people, but in the end, everything's going to turn out okay. We're going to look at the groaning of creation full in the face, at least as best as we can do it. And I want to take you back for just a second to Iris and Nereus, those two people sitting in that atrium in the home of Narcissus, listening to this sentence. And when Iris, the Mauritanian slave girl, hears the creation is groaning, and she's in Rome, and Rome is ascending in power, and she feels that groaning, not only deep in her own heart from the loss of her two children among all the other injustices, but because the empire is growing and is in ascendancy. And that empire is a violent and a brutal one. And Nereus, the young Jew in exile who's sitting there, looks out and sees Rome and sees the violence and sees the justice, the injustice, and sees the idolatry and sees these things that literally turn his stomach when he walks down the street. And he too knows in a visceral way what this groaning is like. And at the moment in which they are hearing this letter, they absolutely do not see any way that situation is going to change. Right? We look back and we say, yeah, in 400 so much, the Roman Empire fell, and then, I don't know, things maybe got better or they didn't, but now they're better anyway. We look back and say, it turned out okay. For them, there was no hope that Caesar was going to fall from the throne. It just wasn't going to happen. And there was no hope that Iris was going to be freed, and there was no hope that Nereus was going to go back to Israel. It just wasn't in the cards. So this line must have resonated very deeply with them. And it's almost in line with this biblical theme of exile. If you just think through your biblical history, and I'm not going to go through it just because of time, but there's this theme of God's people going into exile. One of the main ones we know about is when Israel went into Babylon. And Jerusalem was destroyed. When Judah went into Babylon, Jerusalem was destroyed, and the people were carried off. And this is the moment when the groaning is at its absolute greatness. And even though there were some vague prophecies that something was going to happen and they would come back, that was not part of their screen. That was not on their screen at all. They're right at the point of exile when the groaning is the deepest and there is no sign of anything that's going to change that trajectory. And it's a little bit of that feeling that I'd like us to get today. I'm going to try to help us listen to the groaning of the world, of our creation today, in four categories. The first is racism. The second one is environmental degradation. The third one is war and militarism. And the fourth one is refugees. There are others we could do, but I've chosen those four because we're limited time. They're going to be coming to you in word and image and song. And I want you to be moved. I wouldn't even mind if you got angry. I wouldn't mind if you shed a tear. I wouldn't mind if you felt tense. I wouldn't mind if you felt despair. I wouldn't mind if you felt a little bit hopeless, because when you do that, you're identifying with Iris and Nereus and with Israel in exile and with everybody that's marginalized, who can see no hope and who feels this groaning so deeply. In our world, we can cover that groaning up pretty easily, and we do it. So I'd like to crack that cover a little bit today. And I'm going to be touching on these four areas in different ways. And just before I get started in that, I just want to say this. I've tried to be, when I give statistics, to be as accurate as possible. Do not use websites as sources that advertise Viagra, or invite you to invest in gold or sell you Relief Factor. Try to use as reputable websites and information as I can. And I realize that there are probably experts listening who may even disagree with some of this stuff, which is fine. I understand that. And there are all kinds of nuances. I understand all that. I also, if you want to know something, I can show you the sources. I'm not putting them on the screen the whole time, but I can show them to you. But I'm just doing my best to be as realistic as I can, given the limits that we have. So let's get started. The first one is racism. And what I'd like to focus in on today is the topic of lynching, because I just finished a book called The Cross and the Lynching Tree by James H. Cone, who died in 2018 at the age of 80 and was professor of theology at Union Theological Seminary. Between the period of Reconstruction in the late and the 1950s, there were about 3,500 African Americans who were lynched and about 1,500 white Americans. Lynching is the premeditated extrajudicial killing by a group. And if you read the stories about lynching, they are chilling. And they were used, especially around the turn of the last century, very deliberately by the white community and by the white Christian community to keep the Negro, as they called him, in his place. Senator and Governor Benjamin Tillman, who lived right around the turn of the century, said this: "We of the South have never recognized the right of the Negro to govern white men, and we never will. We have never believed him to be the equal of the white man, and we will not submit to his gratifying his lust on our wives and daughters without lynching him." And those lynchings, which were most often perpetrated by Christians, were accompanied by a kind of a circus atmosphere. Listen to this. "Hundreds of Kodaks clicked all morning at the scene of the lynching. People in automobiles and carriages came from miles around to view the corpse dangling from the end of a rope. Picture cards, photographers installed a portable printing plant at the bridge and reaped a harvest in selling the postcard showing a photograph of the lynched Negro. Women and children were there by the score. At a number of country schools, the day's routine was delayed until boy and girl pupils could get back from viewing the lynched man." And here's pieces of a poem by Walter Everett Hawkins, written in 1920, called "A Festival in Christendom." "And so this Christian mob did turn from prayer to rob, to lynch and burn. A victim helplessly he fell to tortures truly kin to hell. They bound him fast and strung him high. They cut him down lest he should die. Before their energy was spent in torturing to their heart's content, they tore his flesh and broke his bones and laughed in triumph at his groans. They chopped his fingers, clipped his ears, and passed them round as souvenirs. They bored hot irons in his side and reveled in their zeal and pride. They cut his quivering flesh away and danced and sang as Christians may. Then from his side they tore his heart and watched its quivering fibers dart. And then upon his mangled frame they piled the wood, the oil, and flame. And they raised a Sabbath song. The echo sounded wild and strong, a benediction to the skies that crowned the human sacrifice." The song "Strange Fruit" was written around that time. Billie Holiday sang it. And as you listen to it, hear the deep, deep groaning and the interplay between her voice and the piano.
Yeah. is bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black body swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Gallant South, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for to drop. Here's a strange and bitter
every year, we extract an estimated 55 billion tons of fossil energy, minerals, metals, and biomass from the Earth. The world has already lost 80% of its forests, and we're continually losing them at a rate of 375 square kilometers per day. At the current rate of deforestation, 5 to 10% of tropical forest species will become extinct every decade. Every hour, 1,692 acres of productive land become desert. 27% of our coral reefs have been destroyed. If the rate continues, the remaining 60% will be gone in 30 years. We have a garbage island floating in our ocean, mostly comprised of plastics, the size of India, Europe, and Mexico combined. We're using up 50% more natural resources than the Earth can provide. At our current population, we need 1.5 Earths, which we do not have. 75% of all fish stocks in the world are already either exploited, overexploited, or recovering. In the next 30 years, as many as 1/5 of all species alive today will become extinct. 23% of all mammals and 12% of all bird species were considered threatened in 2003. Though warming has not been uniform across the planet, the upward trend in the globally average temperature shows that more areas are warming than cooling. According to the NOAA 2019 Global Climate Summary, the combined land and ocean temperature has increased at an average rate of 0.07 centigrade per decade since 1880, However, the average rate of increase since 1981 at 0.18 degrees centigrade is more than twice as great. Our environment is groaning.
Fun fact, planet Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Mankind, about 140,000 years old. Let me put that in perspective. If you condense the Earth's lifespan into 24 hours, that's one full day, then we have been here on this planet for, drum roll please, 3 seconds. 3 seconds. And look what we've done. We have modestly named ourselves Homo sapiens, meaning wise man. But is man really so wise? Smart, yes, and it's good to be smart, but not too smart for your own good. Yes, we have split the atom. Yes, we build clever machines that navigate the universe in search of new homes. But at the same time, those atoms we split created nuclear warfare. And our quest to explore the galaxy rejects and neglects the home that we have here now. So no, that cannot be wisdom. Wisdom is different. While intelligence speaks, wisdom listens. And we willingly covered our ears to Mother Nature's screams and closed our eyes to all of her help-wanted signs. Wisdom knows that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So if we were wise, we would not be shocked when we see storms that are stronger than ever before, or more drought, hurricanes, and wildfire than ever before, because there's more pollution than ever before, more carbon, more trees cut down than ever before. At a record pace, we have increased the extinction of animals by 1,000 times the normal rate. What a feat. In the next 10 to 100 years, every beloved animal character in every children's book is predicted to go extinct. Lions gone, rhinos gone, tiger, gorilla, elephant, polar bear gone in 3 seconds. Species that have been here longer than us will be gone because of us in this 3 seconds. In an existence shorter than a Vine video, we turn the circle of life into our own personal conveyor belt. Somebody, anybody, help. We were given so much. The only planet in this solar system with life. I mean, we are one in a million. No, actually, scientifically, we are one in a billion, trillion, trillion. That's a one followed by 33 zeros. And I don't want to get too spiritual, but how are we not a miracle? We are perfectly positioned to the sun so we don't burn, but not too distant so we don't turn to ice. Goldilocks said it best. We are just right. This because the real crisis is not global warming, environmental destruction, or animal agriculture. It is us. These problems are symptoms of us, byproducts of us, our inner reflection. Loss of connection has created this misdirection. We have forgotten that everything contributes to the perfection of Mother Nature. Corporations keep us unaware and disconnected. But call me crazy, but I believe we should have the right to eat food that's safe, with ingredients we can pronounce. Drink water that is clean, marvel at trees, breathe air free of toxins. These are natural rights, not things that can be bargained for in Congress. See, they want you to feel powerless, but it is up to you. Yes, you watching this behind this screen to make the effort, because time is of the essence, and only together can we make it to the 4th second.
Since the end of World War II, there have been 41 million war deaths. So since 1945. During World War II, an estimated total of 70 to 85 million people perished, which was about 3% of the 1940 world population. World War I, the total number of military and civilian casualties is estimated to be about 40 million. 20 to 22 million deaths, 20 to 22 million wounded. The total number of Americans killed in all wars since 1775-6 is 1.1 million, of whom 500,000 were killed in the Civil War. Estimates for the total number killed in war throughout all of human history range from 150 million to 1 billion. Over the past 3,400 years, Humans have been entirely at peace for 268 years, which is just 8% of recorded history. In 2017, China, Saudi Arabia, India, France, Russia, United Kingdom, and Germany spent $609 billion on defense. United States spent $649, more than all of those countries combined. Defense spending in the United States accounts for 15% of all federal spending, and roughly half, which is the single largest category of discretionary spending. It is true that defense spending as percent of the gross domestic product is below historical average and is declining. Each year, almost 364,000 Americans die of gun violence. Over 22,000 are suicides, 61%. Almost 13,000, 35%, are homicides. 496, almost 500, are law enforcement shootings. And almost 500 are unintentional shootings. We live in a society, in a world that has tremendously strong currents and streams of violence in it. And we make money on it, and we get rich from it, and we keep doing it, and we never seem to find real solutions. And largely as a result of that violence, there are now more than 70 million refugees and displaced people around the world. That was an increase of 2.3 million people over the previous year. I think I'm talking 2018 here. The world's forcibly displaced population remains at a record high. 25.9 million refugees, 41.3 million internally displaced people, and 3.5 million asylum seekers. Refugee children are five times more likely to be out of school than their non-refugee peers. 37,000 people a day are forced to flee their homes because of conflict and persecution. 57% of all refugees come from Syria, Afghanistan, and South Sudan. And almost 342,000 asylum seekers come from Venezuela. A total of 22,405 persons were admitted to the United States as refugees during 2018. The leading countries of nationality for refugees admitted during this period were the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Burma, and Ukraine. This total of around 22,500 is down from almost 85,000, the highest number of refugees admitted since 2000. An additional almost 39,000 people were granted asylum in the United States during 2018. Between 2014 and 2016, about 90,000 unaccompanied minors, that is, without parent or guardian, arrived at the southern border of the United States. These children were placed in the homes of sponsors around the United States until their cases could be adjudicated. In 2017, approximately 5,000 children were separated from parents or guardians when they crossed the border with their families, not alone, but with their families or with an adult. Most, but not all, of these children have been placed with sponsor families or returned to the country of origin, but the total number of children separated and the location of all of them is not entirely clear. and more is being known now about the impact of this kind of trauma, not only the journey and all involved in coming to the border, but also the separation from parents that's being inflicted on these children. Estimates of the number of undocumented immigrants living in the U.S. range from 10.5 to 12 million, or approximately 3.2 to 3.6% of our population. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals was implemented by President Obama to allow many undocumented individuals who came to the U.S. before their 16th birthday with their parents to work in the U.S. and to defer any action on their immigration cases for a renewable two-year period. About 800,000 of them have been covered by DACA at some point since it was implemented. At present, no new applications are being accepted for DACA people. So the number of Dreamers, as they're called, is not likely to grow. And at this point, anyway, there is literally no hope for legislation that will resolve their issues. You know, of course, of the refugees that have come across the Mediterranean Sea in lifeboats. You've all seen the images. Here's a little reminder. That the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. I hope maybe you've been able to feel some of that groaning this morning. And normally now, a good preacher would turn to the hope and say, everything is going to be all right. And don't misunderstand me, I believe that. But I'm not going to do that today. Because there are more and more voices arising in the Christian communities that are saying that we, as American Christians anyway, do not understand what lament is. And if we feel the groaning of the world, we turn away from it too quickly. And we don't know what it's like to let our lives and our hearts and our minds be broken by the groaning of creation. We shield ourselves from the reasons to lament, and therefore we don't lament when the Bible is full of it. So I'm suggesting that we stay, at least for this service, you can stop at 11:15, in lament mode. And that's why I've canceled singing Joy to the World. Instead, we're going to listen to a lament. It's a Jewish lament. It's based on Psalm 22. It's actually Psalm 22. And it's rooted, as you will see, in the Holocaust. And you remember, Psalm 22 begins with, my God, why have you forsaken me? And those are the words that Jesus used on the cross. And it evidences little hope. But in almost all of the songs of lament, and I want to point this out because it's just honest to do so, there's little hope except that somehow those lamenting look back and they see that God was faithful. And somehow they say, God, you are here. And they trusted you. And you delivered them. So that's there. We're not abandoning you. We're not turning away. We're not saying things are so bad, therefore I'm leaving you. No, we're not doing that. We know you're there. You were there and you are there. But there are no particular answers for today in these songs of lament. There are no easy answers. And there's almost no answers at all. It's just lament. The creation is just groaning. This is exile imagery. We're going into exile. We're being carried away. We don't know where. We don't know what it's going to be like. We don't know for how long it's going to be. We don't know anything. Iris and Nereus could not believe in their wildest dreams that they would ever be freed from the situation in which they found themselves. So listen to this lament. It's rooted, of course, in the Holocaust. It's a Jewish lament. And let it go into your soul.
Daddy. Ad
And for our congregational prayer this morning, I'd like to pray with you. A lament comes from Psalm 77, which was played at the beginning of the service. This particular version is from the Message, and I've adjusted a little bit to make it, in some cases, a little more into a prayer form. So I'd like you to join me with prayer in this lament, and then we're going to conclude by praying together the Lord's Prayer, prayer of our Lord Jesus, so that we don't forget Him. He's here. Our Father in heaven, He says, hallowed be Your name. Your kingdom come, Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one, He says. For Yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. And that's what we cling to as we go into this world, as we're in this world that is groaning. So bow your heads and pray with me. Psalm 77 from the Message. I yell out to You, my God. I yell with all my might. I yell at the top of my lungs. You listen. I found myself in trouble and went looking for my Lord. My life was an open wound that wouldn't heal. When my friends said, everything will turn out all right, I didn't believe a word they said. I remember God and shake my head. I bow my head, then wring my hands. I'm awake all night,